This is Gridiron Graduates, a weekly podcast covering all things football.
Episode number 55, Death Pool. Recorded December 28th, 2016.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Gridiron Graduates. Bill Rossetti, you hitting you guys back up. It's been a while, I know. It's been a pretty hectic couple of weeks recently, but we're back at it. Hope everyone had a great Christmas and is getting ready to celebrate the new year. I know I had a good weekend. Was a little sick over the weekend. Just getting over that now, but we're doing good now. We're back at it. And as always, my buddy Ian Wharton joining us. Welcome back, man. How you doing?
Doing well, man. It's been a busy end of the season here. We're entering week 17 in the NFL year, so we're going to be kind of crunching in as much as we can here before the college football playoff and NFL playoffs kick off. And it's a fun time of year, but it's also kind of that part of year where we start switching gears to the draft and enjoy the last couple games that we have on our schedule.
Yeah, it's just always crazy. We always say this, but it's always crazy how fast the season seems to fly by. You know, we spend all those months gearing up for the start of the season. We're so excited, and now here we are. It's week 17 of the NFL season. It's always bittersweet because for 20 teams, this is it. You know, the road to 2017 begins Monday. For some, of course, it's already started. I think we'll kind of touch on that a little bit. But yeah, I think first we got to talk about, you know, obviously the playoffs are right around the corner, so we'll look at the playoff picture first. We'll jump right into that. We'll start in the AFC, where, of course, Ian is quite happy because his boys are dancing. Looking at the standings, of course, New England leads the East, has clinched the East in the first round by at 13-2. Oakland holds the second seed at 12-3. Pittsburgh clinched the North after a wild finish against the Ravens on Christmas Day. They're locked into the 3 seed at 10-5, and then Houston clinched the South after Tennessee dropped one at Jacksonville and, of course, lost Marcus Mariota. So Houston at 9-6 locked into the 4 seed. Then you have the Chiefs at 11-4. They clinched their playoff spot when the Ravens lost. And then, after a 1-4 start, the Miami Dolphins are in the playoffs. First, just talk about, you know, how excited you were that the Dolphins got into the playoffs, and then just kind of your thoughts on the playoff picture as a whole right now in the AFC.
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited. I obviously truly unexpected. Just everything that's happened between the 1-4 start and Ryan Tannehill's injury, and just the winning of 9 of 10 games, in the manner that they were able to win some of them, it's just been a crazy ride, and it's been a lot of fun to watch a lot of their games this year, and kind of see just, you know, a new coaching staff come in and do really well, and kind of make the most of the talent that they have available. They've gotten lucky at times, which is okay. I think you need luck to win 9 out of 10 games in a row. It's not necessarily a knock or a bad thing. It's just the reality that winning is hard in the NFL, and sometimes it's a game of inches. Some turnovers definitely went their way as well. So I'm excited. Obviously, it's been 5 years since I've seen the Dolphins in the playoffs. I hope Ryan Tannehill can come back, but I also don't want him to come back if it's going to possibly harm him long term. And so I have my fingers crossed that maybe the Dolphins could come to Houston and play the Texans as the 5 seed. They would need significant help to get there. They would need the Chargers to upset the Chiefs this week. But if that were to happen, the Dolphins would be coming to Houston. So I'd be pretty excited because I'd get to go to that game. I don't have high hopes for him in the playoffs unless Tannehill can come back. But even if he can, I don't expect him to be 100%. So really just trying to soak it all in.
And so then, you know, Ian mentioned the scenario where Miami can move up to the 5 seed. Kansas City, of course, can move up to the 2 seed if they win and the Raiders lose. Raiders clinch the West if they win. And if they win and the Patriots lose, the Raiders would actually be the number 1 seed. But, of course, the Raiders suffered a big injury themselves, as Derek Carr suffered basically the same injury that Marcus Mariota suffered. That was one of the crazy parts of Week 16, that Marcus Mariota and Derek Carr essentially both suffered the same injury within hours of each other. Obviously, the Titans are now out of the playoffs, but the good news for them is they're looking at a top 5 pick in the draft. The Raiders, boy, losing Carr is going to hurt. And the talk now is he's basically done for the season. They're saying it's even a long shot for him to play in the Super Bowl if the Raiders were to get there. So it's going to be Matt McGloin. And the question now is, can Matt McGloin lead the Raiders at Denver, you know, against the Broncos team, of course, was just eliminated by the Chiefs. Because they essentially have to win or hope that San Diego beats Kansas City to claim the AFC West. Otherwise, they're going to Houston and Kansas City's getting the bye. But, you know, just an unfortunate set of circumstances for Oakland. And, you know, someone on Twitter, I forget who it was, excuse me, basically made a great comparison in that this is similar to the Bengals last year, and that they had a great regular season, but with just a couple weeks left, they lose their quarterback, and it seemingly derailed everything. You know, we saw what happened to the Bengals. They ended up going one done again. With the Raiders, you know, I just don't know how much trust I have in Matt McGloin to lead this team in such a pressure situation. They're going to need that bye to get, you know, at least give them that extra week to prepare. If not, you're looking at a wild card matchup between Matt McGloin and Tom Savage. So, get your popcorn ready there.
Yeah. Yeah, the AFC side of things on the quarterback front is pretty rough. I'm with you, though, man. I feel bad for the Raiders fans and for Derek Carr. Just brutal luck as far as timing. And if we had a healthy playoff picture in the AFC, like, I think we'd be looking at a really great, potentially great side of the playoffs, with the obvious exception being the Texans. But, I mean, they can even be fun, even if it's Tom Savage. They can be fun because they have a good defense. They have a pretty decent running game with Lamar Miller. And if Savage were to play well, they have the receivers to make a pretty good offensive game as well. So I just, you know, it just stinks with Matt Moore in there. And you know, Ben Roethlisberger hasn't been playing too great of football lately. Ended up getting a win last week, which was huge over the Ravens to win the division. But then obviously with Matt McGloin. So it's just a little bit dampers the hype on that side of things.
Over on the NFC side, 4 of the 6 spots have been claimed. We know Dallas, of course, is locked into the number 1 seed at 13-2. Atlanta has now moved up into the number 2 spot at 10-5 as they clinched the South last week. Seattle, of course, clinched the West. They're the 3rd seed right now at 9-5-1. And Green Bay, winners of 5 in a row, a.k.a. haven't lost since Aaron Rodgers said they're going to run the table. They currently lead the North at 9-6. And, of course, the Sunday night game against the Lions for the division crown. And then you have the Giants as the 5 seed, locked into the 5 seed at 10-5. And then the Redskins are still alive and just barely alive are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we'll get into their crazy scenario that they need to get in a little bit. But looking at the NFC, obviously, you know, all eyes are on Dallas, the way they've been running. But the fact that Green Bay could get in now, and Green Bay's getting hot, they're a team that could make some noise in the playoffs, maybe give Dallas some trouble. Atlanta now with that first round bye, they could be a threat. And then, of course, the Giants already have 2 wins against the Cowboys, so if they meet in the playoffs, that could be Dallas's kryptonite. So, you know, it's really up in the air in the NFC outside of Dallas. I mean, clearly Dallas is the favorite right now, but, you know, it's not like they're a shoo-in for the Super Bowl at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really open on the NFC side of things. I really like the Falcons' chances in the NFC. I like the Falcons' offense. The Cowboys, obviously, I mean, at 13-2, it's hard to go against them. I do worry a little bit about their defense. David Irving has been great in recent weeks for them, but I still don't really trust that secondary. I don't really trust what that defense will do when they face a little bit better of an attack. The Falcons, to me, obviously defense is a question for them too, but if they can get Desmond Trufant back, that's going to be a much better defense. I'd like to see both the Packers and the Lions make the playoffs just because those are two fun quarterbacks. And the Packers, I think Aaron Rodgers is playing fantastic football. They found something out there with Jordy Nelson. He seems to be like he's pretty close to 100%, or at least as close as he'll ever be at this point in his career. Ty Montgomery at running back. It's been explosive and a huge help to them. The Giants have played really well this year. They've got a good defense. Free agent signings have paid off nicely. The offense is a little bit more hit and miss. Seahawks, obviously, we know about them. They're going to be a dangerous playoff team no matter what, even with a flawed roster and offense especially. So I'm really excited about the NFC side of things, and we could end up seeing a great wild card weekend. It'll be interesting to see, though, if the Redskins can get in. The Redskins have to beat the Giants. If the Giants win, they would knock out their arch nemesis. Mm-hmm. And the Buccaneers need a ton of help to get in, basically impossible for them to get in. So
yep.
I think we're pretty much set on the NFC side of things, unless if the Redskins can win. If the Redskins can win, then it starts to get a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, like Ian said, you know, the Redskins, essentially, if they win, they've got a good shot to make the playoffs. Because the only way they would not get in is if the Packers-Lions game ends in a tie.
Hmm.
And, of course, you know, we have seen 2 ties this season, and the jokes right now are that, you know, hey, if the Lions and Packers go to overtime, maybe they'll make a truce and agree to tie, and they'll both make the playoffs. But yeah, if the Redskins can beat the Giants, and the Green Bay-Detroit game doesn't end in a tie, they're in. And they'd be the 6th seed. The Buccaneers need the following. They obviously have to beat Carolina first and foremost. They need Green Bay to lose to Detroit. They need Tennessee to win. They need Indianapolis to win. Dallas and San Francisco. And they need the Giants-Redskins game to end in a tie.
Mm.
That's all that has to happen for the Buccaneers to make the playoffs.
Only.
So, yeah, safe to say the Buccaneers will not be in the playoffs. I mean, just looking at who they need to win, I think we can already mark one as a definite no, and that's San Francisco.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that they would have to have a lot of divine intervention to make it. But it'll be interesting to see, though. I like to root for some of the underdogs here. And so I hope that the Lions make it. The rest of these teams, the Falcons, they're probably the other historical underdog. The rest of these teams have kind of had a lot of success throughout their history. The Packers, Giants, Seahawks in recent history, and Cowboys, obviously, history. So I'd like to see the Lions and Falcons maybe advance as much as possible. I just don't really believe in the Lions, really. To me, they're one of the weaker teams in the playoff picture, probably that's maybe second or third weakest team in the entire playoff picture, not just the NFC.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple weeks ago, this Lions team was sitting at 9-4, sitting as the number 2 seed. Now, of course, they've lost 2 straight. And now they're in a bit of a precarious position here. But again, if the Giants can knock off the Redskins, then all will be okay in Detroit. They'll be in the playoffs. And, you know, obviously fighting for the division crown Sunday night. So, let's kind of go now to the other side of things. Kind of start talking about, you know, like you said earlier, it's going to start shifting to NFL draft as well. We'll look at the top of the draft because, you know, the draft order now is starting to come into focus. Including a couple teams now that are searching for head coaches now, as we've now have three teams looking for head coaches. First, it was the Rams, who finally got rid of Jeff Fisher. Then the Jaguars fired Gus Bradley. And just the other day, you saw, Buffalo fire Rex Ryan.
Yep. Not a shocking move. It's been 17 years since they made the playoffs. Obviously, not all that's on Rex Ryan and his staff, but, you know, that team actually got worse after getting rid of Doug Marrone in his regime. And, I mean, Marrone technically opted out. It wasn't really – but that ownership definitely did not help that situation. And this was a team with Tyrod Taylor, an upgrade at quarterback, and they still did worse. I mean, you can't be a defensive coach and hire your brother to be the defensive coordinator and consistently have a horrible tackling effort week in and week out and eventually have one of the lesser defenses in the NFL. It's just can't afford to have that. I'm not surprised. I think this is the right call. Honestly, I've never been a Rex fan. I think that he's been one of the more overrated coaches in the NFL, so this wasn't a surprise for me.
Yeah, he definitely can't argue with any of the moves. You know, who'd have thought, too, yeah, that the Bills would be worse after Doug Marrone left. You know, Marrone left after a 9-7 season, and the Bills haven't gotten back to that point yet. You know, they might get to 8-8. After this week, but then again, they're starting E.J. Manuel, a quarterback, for whatever reason. Yeah, Doug Whaley must have had too much to drink on Christmas weekend, because there's no reason. I'd rather see them play Cardale Jones if they're going to bench Tyrod Taylor.
It makes zero sense. One, I don't understand running him out of town. I know that they've got an option at the end of this year for him, essentially, where if they exercise it, they would basically guarantee him about $27 million over the next 2 years. You know, that's really low money for a good quarterback. I consider him a top 20 quarterback. Now, I'm not saying he's consistent. There's definitely weaknesses in his game. But he's a creative downfield thrower, and he's excellent with his legs. He's got room to improve in the pocket, and he can improve throwing down the middle of the field. But he's a second-year starter. And I don't want to bury him because he didn't really make progress in his second season. This is still a good starting quarterback in the NFL, in a league that's devoid of good starters. So what I'm watching for is, if I'm them, I understand actually sitting him if you're going to sit him for Cardale Jones. If their plan is to roll with Cardale next year, okay, then I understand maybe moving on from Tyrod. If you're that confident in Cardale, then I actually have no problem with it. If you're that convinced, it may not be the right choice, but I understand the move. But to sit him for E.J. Manuel is just really baffling, unless if they plan on trading Tyrod. If you don't have a better option on the roster or one in the waitings, you can afford to pay him the 20th biggest contract for any quarterback next year as far as his cap hit. Like, that's pretty palatable. You can deal with that. If I'm another team and they start to put out feelers for a trade, oof. I mean, I'm happily giving up a mid-round pick if I'm the Browns or the 49ers or the Jets. Even the Broncos. I've heard the Broncos are going to be interested in him. That would make a lot of sense. So You know, I think this is a major mistake. If they're going to run him out of town, they've got him on a good contract. I'd say give him another year. You can always trade him next year if you really don't like what you see. But and I think that I do think they will keep him for the record. I think that we're hearing a little bit of smoke, but I think that they, if they weren't more sold on him than what I think has leaked out, I don't think they would have given him this contract extension at all. But they chose to. I think for a reason. I think they're going to stick with him, but it'll probably be up to the next head coach, really.
Who, by the way, will be chosen by Mr. Doug Whaley himself. So,
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
Which is shocking that he's going to get a third head coach that he's going to be able to bring in there.
Well, that's the Bills for you, I guess.
Yeah, and I've seen rumors of Anthony Lynn, their offensive coordinator. He's gotten a lot of hype, and you know, I'm fine with that. Again, I don't really care so much about the resume. It's nice to have a good resume as a coordinator somewhere. I'm gonna end up pushing hard for guys like Kyle Shanahan and Terrell Austin and Josh McDaniels. I think those guys should get a chance to be a head coach. But I'm okay with a guy like Anthony Lynn too. Like if he is a Mike Tomlin type coach who connects with the players really well, can assemble a strong staff, can manage the day-to-day things without being a guru of X's and O's, I'm okay with that. That's Mike Tomlin. And Mike Tomlin's been a good coach in the NFL. He's not a perfect coach, but he's been an above-average winning coach at a high level. So if they feel confident in that, I'm good with that. I hope that they do not go the route of like a Tom Coughlin. I don't think Tom Coughlin connects with players nowadays. He's 71 years old. I know he's been linked to the Jaguars and the Bills already. I don't understand the purpose of that. He didn't do a good job with the Giants the last couple of years. You know, he did build a good staff, and there's something to be said for that. But I don't see a guy connecting with people 40 to 50 years younger than him.
So kind of going now to the top of the draft order, since I think we can start focusing on that. It was pretty crazy during week 16. The Browns finally got their first win after a missed field goal by the Chargers. Gave the Browns the win. And for the moment, the 49ers were in the driver's seat for the number one pick. And then they went ahead and made a comeback and scored on a two-point conversion and beat the Rams, giving the number one pick right back to the Browns. Now, you know, as players, they're going to fight to win every game, obviously. So at this point, the Browns are in position now for the number one pick, Niners at number two, and those are likely going to be your top two picks, because San Francisco has the easiest schedule, really, of the top three, so it is going to be those two. And then you've got, I believe, Jacksonville at three. I think Jacksonville's ahead of Chicago right now. So I think Jacksonville will be three, Chicago four, and then the Titans, as we mentioned before, would be sitting at number five right now thanks to that trade with the Rams. So the Titans are in pretty good position, being a near playoff team, and they're going to have a top five pick. So they're looking at two picks in the top, say, 18 or something. The Browns, of course, in real good position. They're looking at potentially two top 10 picks, including likely the number one pick, because I don't see them. Well, I mean, Pittsburgh's probably going to rest some starters, but is that going to be enough for the Browns to get the win in Pittsburgh? We'll see. But most likely they're going to get the number one pick, and I know you're a fan of Myles Garrett potentially landing there in Cleveland, which would be certainly a big boom for the Browns to help that defense, and they potentially get their quarterback with that second pick, you know, a few picks later, you know, someone like DeShone Kizer, maybe.
Yeah, and the thing that they're going to have to weigh is how much do the Browns like the other quarterbacks. So if they don't go quarterback at one, they're not going to get the number one or number two taking quarterback. They may end up with the third or fourth quarterback. Now they can trade back up. I don't think the 49ers can afford to pass on a quarterback. I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets, the Bears, San Fran, like those teams could all take quarterbacks. So they're going to have to play the field a little bit, and they're going to have to be comfortable with some of the quote-unquote other quarterbacks. I think Kaiser goes first or second in terms of quarterbacks. I think Trubisky also goes first or second. We could see a guy like Brad Kiam. I think Kai is going to go, if he does declare, probably in the middle rounds. But then Deshaun Watson, and I think Deshaun Watson would be a natural fit for the Browns if they don't go quarterback number one. And so the question for them is, do they like the other quarterbacks, or are they fixated on one? If they're fixated on one, they're going to have to take him at one. If not, they can afford to take Myles Garrett, which I think is the right move. But I understand, though, too. I understand if there's someone else that they prefer, if they just love Kaiser or Watson or Trubisky or even Mahomes, if he ends up declaring, whoever it may be, I think it's perfectly fine to take him at one if he's your guy. In terms of talent, Myles Garrett is easily the best player in this draft, period. He's the best prospect I've evaluated in 5 years. Now, that being said, though, as we're seeing even in this Kansas State game tonight, it's easier to game plan away from a defensive end than it is a quarterback, obviously. We know that. It's not shocking. As important as defensive end and slash edge rusher is, it's still a guy that does not affect the play every single play like a quarterback can. So that's going to be a tough decision for Hugh Jackson and his front office. And not just you, that's everyone in the top five, top 10. I think these quarterbacks are good enough to go that high. And I think that the draft class is a deep draft class, especially on defense. And that should make you more willing to take your quarterback early. But you have to make that decision and say, you know, is this guy going to be an above average quarterback? And I think that's what it all boils down to. If he can be an above average quarterback, that's probably worth it for you, because that's going to save you a job. And it's going to keep you a job for a long time in most instances. Not every instance, especially nowadays, lately, it seems like coaches are getting fired even first or second year, even after taking a rookie quarterback, which is just crazy. But that's just kind of the reality of the NFL season. But in theory, it's a good thing for you to have that.
So that's kind of, so talk about Deshaun Watson, let's kind of use that as a nice segue to dip into the college game, because of course we had a lot of bowl games since we last talked. But we'll go ahead and preview this weekend, because of course this weekend is the big one. The two playoff semifinals taking place Saturday. Deshaun Watson and Clemson taking on Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl, and then Washington against number one Alabama in the Peach Bowl, and then the winners meet on January 9th. Definitely should be an exciting playoff. I don't know if we even got a chance to kind of discuss the four teams that made it to the playoffs and whether the committee kind of got it right. In my opinion, I think they did. I know Penn State won the Big Ten, and they looked impressive doing it, but they did have two losses. One of them was to Pitt, who barely made the top 25. So that was definitely hurtful. I mean, you know, the four teams that got in are the four teams not named Western Michigan that lost less than two games. So to me, I think they got the teams and the order of the teams right as far as, you know, seeding them and selecting.
Yeah, looking at the bowls and the playoffs, the seeding, how that works out, is going to be really interesting. obviously Monday is going to be just an enormous day for these games. I'm most looking forward to just to kind of touch on some of these other games real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see this Michigan Florida State game before we even get to the playoff games.
Yep.
I want to see that. I want to see Stanford, North Carolina, Oklahoma State, Colorado, which that one's actually coming up before the weekend even hits. There's a lot of good games. I mean, there's been some good ones so far. I haven't been able to catch a lot of them. I generally like to go back and watch some games just because the weird times that they play some of these games. Sometimes they play them in like the afternoon or especially being central time, it's a little bit tougher for me. But
I think there was one that started at 11 in the morning. Didn't the St. Pete Bowl or one of them start 11 in the morning?
Yeah, so let's see. It was the...
I think that was the St. Pete Bowl.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
Miami, Ohio, and Mississippi State.
Yeah, so it's like, this stuff's really difficult. Like, I don't really know, like, how they expect. It's not like everyone... I know a lot of kids have school off this week, and that's why they fit all these games in, because they're working around, like, the school's calendars, but it's kind of tough for us to watch that stuff live, so I usually go back and watch them. But this weekend's just a great opportunity to catch some of these big-time primetime matchups, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, of course, Rose Bowl next week, Penn State taking on USC. I think that's going to be a great matchup. You know, obviously, both teams playing really well, and we'll have had plenty of time to scout each other and prepare for each other. So I think that's going to be a barn burner. I'm excited for that one. You know, you mentioned some of the other games, too. You know, even the Sugar Bowl is going to be fun, and obviously I'm looking forward to watching Western Michigan. You know, I'm really excited to see what they can do against a stingy Wisconsin team on such a big stage. So, but as far as the playoffs go, what are you looking forward to? What do you think is going to happen? What's your pick?
Sorry, so this is for the playoff games?
Yeah, for the playoffs.
Oh, playoff games. Okay, so we're looking at Saturday here. First game, Washington versus Alabama. I'm going to take Alabama here in a blowout. It's not so much that I think Alabama is that great. I just think that Washington is not a great matchup against them. I hope I'm wrong here because I like Washington. And defensively, they are a very good team. But I do not like how Washington's offense matches up with Alabama. I think Alabama's going to sell out to stop John Ross, and they're going to really force Jake Browning to make some really tough throws into tight windows, and I don't think he has the arm for that. Alabama scored off of special teams, a turnover or defensive turnover, I believe, in 9 or 10 straight games. I mean, that's just absurd. And if Washington makes one of those mistakes, they will lose. There's just not that margin for error. And I think Washington's a really good team. It's just a tough matchup for them. I would like Washington, not necessarily pick them against the other two teams, Ohio State and Clemson, but I would like their chances a lot more. I think Bama just, they roll these games so quickly where it's a 7-point lead. All of a sudden, 5 minutes later, it's now a 17 or 20 point game. And I think that's what happens here in the third or fourth quarter. I do think that they'll advance to the national championship, and then it's a much tougher game. I think that both the other teams match up better than Washington does. So I'm going to go ahead and take Alabama in the other game. This is a tough one. I kind of lean towards Clemson because I don't like what I've seen from JT Barrett a lot of this season for Ohio State. If JT Barrett plays well, which he has in these big games, like he's thrown the ball well. And when I say play well, I really just mean throw the ball well, because he's going to run well. But if he can throw the ball effectively downfield, the Buckeyes will win. I just don't have that confidence in him. He's a very inaccurate passer, very inconsistent passer. I don't think he's good enough to really get this done. He could definitely prove me wrong because he's done it many times before where he just has a really good game, and when he has a good game, the Buckeyes usually win in a blowout. There's no real in between. They either lose a close game or they win in a blowout, and it usually all comes down to JT Barrett's throwing performance. I'm going to go with Clemson, though. They're a veteran team. They're much older and more experienced than the Buckeyes. Deshaun Watson's really come alive in the second half of the season. Mike Williams has as well. I'm going to go ahead and pick Clemson there.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. I think it's going to be, you know, a rematch of last year, and I think it's going to be the same result. I think Alabama beats Clemson again to claim the national title in what could be, you know, another classic like we saw last year. But boy, that Fiesta Bowl is going to be so much fun, I think. Just watching Watson and Barrett go at it, that's going to be fun. Yeah, it's easy, and I think you're right. I think it's easily going to be the better of the two semifinals. Washington has to work it out for them. They have a great defense, but boy, Alabama's just on another world right now. You know, it's Alabama against the field at this point.
Yeah, and I do think in a sense that I think Clemson can beat them. I do think Ohio State can beat them. They really haven't played anybody this year, and I think that there is something to that, but there is a lot of talent on that team. We obviously know that they're well coached. I do think that they're vulnerable. It's kind of relative when it's a situation like this, because we don't know for sure, but we know that they have a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. And they only really have to beat two teams at this point. And of course they're going to have like the favorite status. And they should.
Something else I kind of want to touch on, since we have a little bit of time. The Senior Bowl, the roster has been building. It's now up to 92 players. So they've only got about 20 left. I'm excited to say that I actually have media credentials for the game. I'm very excited about that. So I think it's pretty likely now at this point that I'm going to be making the trek down to Mobile for Senior Bowl week. So I'm very excited to have it pretty planned out. Just got to figure out like travel and all that stuff. But I think it's pretty much all systems go at this point. So, just kind of looking at the most recent Senior Bowl acceptances from this past week. You had Zach Banner, the USC offensive tackle, Corey Clement, running back of Wisconsin, Russell Douglas, West Virginia corner, Cole Mazza, Alabama long snapper, Ethan Posick, LSU center, and Dalvin Tomlinson, D tackle for Alabama. So, I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see any of these guys or, some of the others that have accepted. If you have any thoughts on some of the other players recently that have accepted their spot to Mobile.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you're going to have the chance to go, man, and I do encourage all listeners, if they can go. It's such a great opportunity. To go, whether you have media credentials or not. It's, if you have media credentials, you get a chance to interview players, and that's great. It's a really good exposure, especially for people wanting to be in sports media. As far as the players, I actually announced this, I believe it was early this week. I'm going to do my draft guide again this year. I took last year off, just didn't have enough time for it. I'm going to do my draft guide this year. So I have seen bits and pieces of those players. I'm going to hold off a little bit, though. Just because I've only seen glimpses of guys, maybe a couple games, haven't specifically sat down just to watch that player. Usually when I watch during the season, I watch the whole team, and I just take notes as I notice them, which is great for going back to, but it's not great for giving you a great specific look at them. So I'm getting through guys as fast as I can. I'm already 90% done with the running backs. I'm waiting for the quarterbacks to declare. They'll be done once guys officially declare. Wide receivers, I'm working my way through them as well. So I'm powering through these. Got a new design for those that bought the 2015 guide. Going to be a little bit smaller, as not in terms of prospect reports, but going to be smaller in terms of size. The sheer size of that one was ridiculous. It ended up being like multiple gigabytes because I used really big files, and it was a beautiful draft guide, and I got a lot of great compliments from it. But it was a massive file to download, and I don't want to do that to folks again. So learning from my first mistakes, and it's going to be a great draft guide, but I do just want to point out that I can talk a little bit about those guys, but I'm going to hold off a little bit right now, just so I don't, you know, end up three, and all evaluations are fluid, but, you know, 3 months from now when I'm actually done with guys, I can speak a little bit more intelligently, and especially as I get further and further into the different positions. Right now, I've kind of just started with the offensive skill positions, so don't want to really get too far deep into it, guys I don't know too much about.
No, absolutely, and yeah, it's great that you got the draft guide coming out, so, you know, definitely be on the lookout for that when he sends that out. Just another fantastic guide for you to have for when the draft rolls around, and, you know, and we go through, even when we get to, like, pro days and the lead up to the draft, so it'll be a fun time, and, you know, really glad you're getting back into that. But yeah, so, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to, seeing a lot of these players. You know, one thing I'll note is, I'm just fascinated right now that we're going to have a Division II quarterback at the Senior Bowl in, Antonio Pipkin of Tiffin. Yeah, because there was a little bit of room, obviously, at the quarterback position, because you did have two quarterbacks that accepted their invites but are ultimately not going to play because of injury, those being Chad Kelly of Ole Miss and Seth Russell of Baylor. So your quarterbacks for the Senior Bowl will be C.J. Beathard of Iowa, Josh Dobbs of Tennessee, and I'm probably going to say this wrong, you know, You might know this, Ian. Sefo Liufau.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Of Colorado. You know, apologies to all the Colorado fans out there. You know, tweeted me, giving me the correct pronunciation. Nate Peterman of Pitt, Antonio Pipkin of Tiffin, and Davis Webb of Cal are going to be your quarterback. So, you know, certainly I'll be looking at them. I'll probably watch the offensive linemen too, since, you know, that was always that's always kind of one of the positions I like to watch too. You know, and then maybe I'll talk to people and learn about secondary and cornerbacks, learn a little bit there. You know, especially with a guy like Corn Elder going, because there's a lot of talk on him. So he'll probably be a guy that I'll be, that I'll try to keep an eye on. Dez King, of course, has had a lot of buzz. So definitely a lot of players that are very intriguing that I'm looking forward to seeing. And just in general, I'm just so excited to, you know, have the opportunity to go down and, you know, I get to be on the field, and I hope to meet a lot of people. You know, just a couple names off the top of my head that I'd like to meet: Matt Miller, Jeff Risden, Shane Hallam, so many guys I'd like to meet. And then obviously, if you're able to make it down there, that's all the better. If not, you know, we'll be able to do a podcast. I'll kind of be like live on site that week, so, yeah, I'm just thrilled. I can't wait for the 21st to get here for when I start making the travel down.
Yeah, man, for sure. And a lot of those guys are more than willing to be helpful. going out to like Veet's at night is a really good opportunity to network with not only NFL people, but also with the guys that we know on Twitter. You'll see a lot of familiar faces just standing around or sitting in the bleachers. My advice is for anyone going, go ahead and contact those people beforehand so you guys can meet up and hang out at these events. As far as the on-field talent, it's a good opportunity to kind of focus on one position per day or one positional group, whether it be the wide receivers against the cornerbacks or be offensive line versus defensive line. You don't see much from the running backs, you don't see much from the linebackers, and you don't see a ton from the quarterbacks just because of the nature of the drills until they're doing team drills. So that's kind of my advice just from what I've seen. If you try to take it all in, it's too much. There's too much going on. There's not enough time. It's overwhelming. And for folks going their first time, it is kind of overwhelming. It was for me. You know, even seeing practices and stuff before, depending on the coaching staff, especially Gus Bradley, he's not obviously not going to be there this year, but you know, he ran his practices pretty quick. If it ends up being the Browns and 49ers, which I somewhat expect it to be, Chip Kelly's going to run his practice in a very interesting manner. I think Hugh Jackson's going to be a pretty aggressive coach as well. So, you know, for anyone going, you can always feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. I'd be more than happy to give any advice. I know Bill and I, we've been talking about it throughout the year, and I'm more than happy to assist that. But I had hopes of going. I don't think I'll be able to, but it's definitely going to be a great year. The talent, from what I've seen, very promising. It looks like a very good haul for those guys. Credit to the Senior Bowl staff, Patrick Wu and Savage. They did a really good job of getting guys there. Phil Savage to get guys there. Hopefully the quarterbacks. It's been a bit of a tough thing this year with the injuries at quarterback, and guys didn't really progress the way that we had hoped. But it's cyclical. There's nothing they can really do about that. It'd be great if they could get a guy like Deshaun Watson there. I think he is eligible. So fingers crossed, maybe he would go. I don't think he would. But other than that, though, the positionals are very, very strong.
Yeah, no doubt. So right around the corner, so I'll certainly be, you know, giving my thoughts, and you know, I could certainly feel that I'll be overwhelmed when I get down there, but man, it's just going to be a fun time. The drive down obviously is going to be quite interesting, but man, it's going to be so worth it, and I can't wait to be down there that week. And just hang out, and yeah, it's gonna be a matter of what bars do I hit? Where's everyone gonna go? Like at night, where you know, what bars we hitting up, and just who's gonna, just how much fun we're gonna have. Oh man, I can't wait, man. I can't wait. Yeah, I wish you were going, but you know, I'm sure one of these years we'll be able to go there together and just do it up big.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, I think that's a good place to wrap it up here. I guess, oh, real quick too, I'll update. You know, because I've been mentioning about the Scott Fish Bowl. Did advance in through the first round of the playoffs just barely, but I squeaked in. But my team took a dump in the second round, and that's where my run ended. So made a decent run, had a very lucky run for sure. So I think I represented us pretty well in the league. Congrats to Raymond Summerlin of Roto-World. He actually wound up winning the whole thing. He was the ultimate champion of the Scott Fish Bowl this season, and he got a ton of prizes, including, you know, $250 cash from 444.com. He gets just a whole bunch of stuff. Interview on the Roto Expert Show. A lot of good stuff. So congrats to him. And just want to give a shout out to Mr. Scott Fish himself for putting this all together and just putting up with everyone and everything that goes into a league as big as this. You know, we're all very thankful and grateful for all the time and effort you put into it and how much fun we had. And I'm, you know, definitely looking forward to next year, whether it stays at 480 teams or whether it increases, which it very well could, to 720, which would be very fun. But yeah, so thanks, Scott. It was a real fun time. So with that, I think we're going to wrap things up. Again, hope everyone had a great Christmas. And I hope everyone has a fantastic New Year. You know, enjoy it, be safe. Enjoy the games, enjoy whatever you choose to do. Ian, Happy New Year, my friend. You know, as always, it's always a pleasure to sit here and chat football with you most weeks. Usually every week when we get a chance. Again, it's been busy for us, but it's always fun with you, my brother.
Absolutely, my friend. I always look forward to it. I'm glad we're back. We're going to try to be as consistent as possible. Obviously, it's a pretty busy time of the year for everybody. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy holidays. Thanks so much for listening. We always appreciate it.
Yep, so for Ian Wharton at NFL Film Study, I'm Bill Rossetti at Bill_Rossetti. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next year on the Gridiron Graduates. Until then, take care, my friends.